it's going to come up. Abby Scheffer couldn't be here today. She was called to Boston, so I offered to give this presentation in her stead. I was part of the CDC work group that met weekly to discuss PCV13 program implementation, anticipating the kind of steps we would have to take ahead of time prior to licensure and recommendation, trying to address all of the challenges that you would face and do face now, what we were going to put into our communication and education materials, as well as kind of next step type activities, monitoring vaccine uptake, as well as various evaluation activities. So on the side of program implementation, we talked about calls more often than weekly were made and information disseminated via our grantee messages email system to all of the grantees on how they should manage the remaining inventory that they had for PCV7, knowing that PCV13 was coming, and then trying to anticipate dates for those involved in vaccine allocation, vaccine distribution of licensure and recommendations, and then trying to, again, think ahead on the logistics of implementation. And so I'll go through each one of these. As far as inventory management, ahead of licensure, we worked with the state immunization programs to prepare for this transition, telling them to bring down their inventories to a 3-week amount for their, of course, this is the public sector vaccine and state McKesson depots, and this is in an effort, of course, to minimize wastage of PCV7 upon arrival of PCV13. A letter went out to grantees in December of 2009 and January of 2010, recommending that they place smaller orders more frequently so as to offset having a glut of PCV7 in their office. And to communicate other issues that would come up as far as implementation with respect to this vaccine. And then the vaccine was licensed on the day of the ACIP meeting, February 24th. That may or may not be a first. It hasn't happened very often. And we were very fast because we had anticipated that we want to begin implementing this as quickly as possible. So by March 3rd, we had posted our provisional recs, and on March 12th, ACIP recs were published in the MMWR, kind of back-to-back recommendations talking both about surveillance issues and epi of invasive disease, as well as kind of the nitty-gritty schedule for the use of this vaccine. And there is a VFC resolution, and I've got the, I guess I don't really want to take the time to read everything that's on this slide. The major point is that there is a VFC resolution up that accommodates PCV13. If you just kind of skim through the wording that's on this slide, you can see PCV7 is mentioned quite a bit. I think that's just kind of to have legal coverage as far as the VFC program is concerned, because as you'll see, for some of you, you haven't gotten your PCV13 right away, and you can still use your PCV7 and if you don't have it yet. But we do, I'll reiterate, that we want you to start using PCV13 instead of PCV7 as soon as you receive it. As far as the issues of distribution and use, once you start to receive your PCV13, what do you do with your PCV7 that you still have? In the private sector, orders were shipped as of March 15th, and they are accepting returns, even partial returns, on PCV7. In the public sector, contract negotiations were completed within a 2-week period following licensure slash recommendation, and were available for ordering in the public sector on March 18th. For vaccines that you have in your public sector, your McKesson inventory, you can swap out PCV13 for PCV7, and the feds are going to pay the difference for this public vaccine, the McKesson inventory. Providers that are in this situation, they should contact their state immunization programs for guidance on how to go about doing this. And so that information will flow up from the provider to the grantee, and then eventually will come to us. And there is a deadline on this. In order to receive credit, all your unused PCV7 has to be returned to McKesson by May 10th. Now, we do have a policy on what's called two-directional borrowing between VFC and private stock vaccine. And this is a question that comes to CDC a lot. Can a provider borrow between their private stock vaccine and their VFC stock of PCV13? And this is an issue because of availability of potential availability of private stock vaccine ahead of public stock vaccine. And according to CDC's policy, CDC does allow the borrowing of VFC vaccine, and this is kind of the flip side I'll address first, the borrowing of VFC vaccine to be administered to non-VFC eligible patients in limited circumstances due to an unexpected lack of private stock vaccine. So we do allow that. Providers must document these situations. We want you to keep track of all of this dose per dose. And also the flip side, when it's necessary to borrow from private stock due to a lack of VFC vaccine. This practice generally is not allowed in all states, most of them, but not all of the states, and providers should check with their state immunization or VFC program office about this. Now some highlights of our implementation recommendations. Again, because of its higher valency and better protection, protection against the other six strains, PCV13 is the preferred vaccine if you have both available. We do not want you to discard your PCV7 doses because we all know it's hard to predict the flow of patients that see their provider, and you don't want to get stuck in a situation where you perhaps have some PCV13 and you use up all of your PCV13, and or if you haven't gotten your PCV13 yet, you need to use those PCV7 doses. We want you to give it if it's the only one you have. So we don't want you to discard, and you're going to have to play around with this because I've already mentioned the deadline for returning your PCV7, so you just have to kind of time it out. We do recommend a supplemental dose of PCV13 for those that have received a complete series of PCV7, and that's kind of a useful situation here. It means you could give that what you thought was the last dose of PCV7, and there still is a recommendation for that supplemental dose of PCV13 to follow. But I'll mention that there is not an active it's not an active recall situation that should be given at the next medical visit. Supplies of PCV13 should be adequate to allow providers to implement the routine and supplemental doses. As far as some of the challenges that we expect that you're telling us you're already having and we expect you to have, is the identification of children for the supplemental dose. Again, we're not recommending an active recall process for this. We're always kind of carefully titrating and balancing the supply. But we want you to use the strategies that we recommend to make sure that opportunities are not missed, including your provider reminders, flagging charts during office visits for that next patient visit, and that's when they would get the vaccine. That's a regularly scheduled patient visit. Communicating with parents, again, you have to emphasize that there's a new vaccine coming. You don't have it yet, and that, but that if you do have it, that this one will provide additional protection. If you don't have it, that PCV7 was not an ineffective vaccine, and we want them to get that protection with PCV7, and they can come in for the supplemental dose of PCV13, which is also recommended. Provider offices that have the PCV13 in stock for private pay children, again, that's the challenge you're going to face, that bidirectional borrowing is in place. CDC doesn't discourage the flip side. Because of cost differences, and it's a $20 cost difference between 13 and 7, 13 is around $20 more expensive per dose. Anecdotal reports that providers are keeping their PCV70 use until the supply is gone before ordering PCV13. You should not do this. We want you to provide the protection of, with PCV13. And so we've developed communication and educational materials, which are available on the pneumococcal the vaccines website under our the section where we have the listing of all of our diseases. We have frequently asked questions websites, both for parents and for providers. I'm most familiar with the provider question and answer. There's a few of the epi questions in there, but most of it actually is kind of the implementation, you know, when you should use the vaccines that you have in your office. There's also a podcast entitled New and Improved Vaccine that's on our website. As far as the activities that are coming up in the future for monitoring uptake and education evaluation activities, first of all, we plan to monitor uptake, use our National Immunization Survey. That's the gold standard that we use for all of the vaccines, to not all, but most of the vaccines, to monitor uptake of these vaccines. It's a random digital telephone survey that accounts for about 23,000 households per year. PCV13 was added to the immunization history, the provider immunization history questionnaire, so that you can now identify PCV7 and PCV13, which allows you also to capture up to 6 pneumococcal-containing doses. There are, I don't know if it's likely, but it's definitely possible that high-risk kids might get up to 6 doses of vaccine, so we wanted to make sure you had the ability to enter all that information in. This survey also allows us to describe the uptake by provider type, VFC status, and income as well. Also, another programmatic indicator of the uptake is the information we have from the manufacturer, the number of doses, and our purchases of these doses from off the CDC, your purchases, I guess, or VFC's purchases off the CDC federal contract. I think there was a question that kind of addressed this. Are we going to be able to accommodate in additional ordering because of the supplemental dose? And we are going to monitor this very closely, and we do expect an increase over time between what we measure at a baseline in quarter two and quarter four, primarily due to the slow increase of knowledge of this recommendation, and we're trying to get the message out now. As far as our evaluation activities, an analysis by our registry branch, the Immunization Information Systems branch, on early uptake and transition to PCV13 to be conducted in the fall of 2010. A survey of provider attitudes and practices, as well as barriers for fall of 2010, and also a vaccine effectiveness study to be performed in the spring in 2011. Information systems, they're going to incorporate the CVX codes for PCV13 so that it can be distinguished from PCV7, so we can get an accurate measurement, and a sentinel site analysis will be conducted in fall of 2010 among the following states listed here, and this will provide us our earliest kind of window into a method to evaluate PCV13 uptake as well. The survey of providers, will be conducted with Sentinel physicians, both pediatrics and family practitioners, as well as program managers. We're going to send a survey out in the fall of 2010 to try to describe the pattern of PCV7, PCV13 administration, metrics, public-private, provider type, and also to help identify barriers and facilitators of the transition. I do want to make an additional comment about the vaccine effectiveness evaluation. That is going to be happening in all 10 EIP sites and 2 of the ELC sites, LA County and Utah. And so enrollment we anticipate to begin in May or June of 2010, depending on the site. We'll probably have our results back before June of 2012, actually probably later than that. So that evaluation is being supported by the ARRA stimulus funding. I'm going to, here's another listing of some of the websites I've already talked about. Again, it's the disease-specific pneumo website on the CDC's vaccines website, so you have the URLs available to you, the question and answer, frequently asked questions that we anticipate to receive and have already begun to receive as well. And so I thank and acknowledge my colleagues on the PCV13 vaccine implementation working group. And I'm happy to take any, if we have time, any additional questions that people have on implementation.
Thanks, Andrew. I think we've got time for 5 minutes of questions.
Okay, good morning. For those high-risk children up to 18 years of age who have not received PPV23, so the interval between PCV13 and PPV23 would be what?
It's the minimum interval is 8 weeks. Yeah. Anything else?
I actually don't have a question on implementation. I was wondering if the person who asked the question on surveillance, if you're still in the room, if I could talk with you briefly after the session.
Thanks, Sandy. Okay, well, if there are no further questions, then thanks for all for coming. And